Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, how do you deal with a correction? Stock markets have taken a significant tumble in recent days and the US market is now hovering 10% below its recent high. What's causing it? How should you react? And what comes next? If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. With markets entering 2022 near record highs, some easing back was expected in the new year, but the falls we've seen in recent days have been much more sudden than anyone predicted, and now the talk is of a correction, understood to be a 10% fall from the peak. Some parts of the market are facing a bear market, which is a 20% fall. That's tough for any investor. The solace for whom, I suppose, is that they have just enjoyed a pretty extraordinary three-year run to get us to this point. So, what comes next? To answer that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome. There's many things to say about the falls we've seen over the past week or so, including that they actually could have been worse than they actually were. But why don't we start with what's happened to prices at a headline level?
Yes, well, at a headline level, they've fallen back. And, you know, as you said, the main benchmark of US shares, the S&P 500, has now fallen by almost 10%. In fact, on Monday, it fell by more than 10% briefly. We'll come back to Monday because that was an interesting day. So that is the usual definition of a correction. Parts of the market have actually fallen further. As you say, the NASDAQ index, which is much more heavily geared towards technology stocks, which have borne the brunt of this sell-off, is now down by about 20%. And in fact, something like two-thirds of the constituent companies within the NASDAQ index have fallen by more than 20%. So, yeah, you know, we have seen, you know, a pretty significant retrenchment in share prices. But as you rightly pointed out at the beginning, it comes after a long period when prices have been rising very sharply. So I don't think anyone should be surprised by this. That is the nature of markets. We do get pullbacks, but it doesn't make it any easier to cope with when it's actually happening.
Yeah, and let's focus on what happened on Monday. We're recording on Tuesday, so that counts as yesterday. The market actually ended ever so slightly higher in the US, but it really looked for a long time as if that wouldn't happen. What exactly happened?
Yeah, so Monday actually will go down in the history books because it was a pretty unusual movement in the market. I read a report on this this morning actually from Goldman Sachs, which was saying that the stock market has not closed higher on the same day that it had already fallen by more than 4%, any more than about half a dozen times in the last 30, 40 years. That's how unusual the big swing in markets on Monday was. And a really heavy fall and then a very rapid recovery. So what we're seeing is not just a fall in markets, and possibly more disconcerting for investors is we're seeing a lot of volatility in prices, and that is very unsettling.
And I've seen, Tom, you've written in commentary that part of that could be to do with the liquidity in the market and also other sort of technical factors. Is there anything to say there?
Yeah, I mean, well, the point to say is that actually the liquidity, the ease of buying and selling shares in the market is not particularly good at the moment, and what we're seeing is the use of derivatives. So sort of slightly more complex investments to take a position on the underlying market. And that in a thin market, that can create volatility in markets. And that's basically what we've been seeing. It's a technical issue, but it does tend to result in markets moving more than they might otherwise have done.
Yeah, indeed. Now you've mentioned there, Tom, about different things going on under the surface here. And actually, if you read the commentary around the last week or so in markets, you'll see the market sort of divided up in lots of different ways. I mean, you've got the overall market in the US often described using the S&P 500. But as you said, you've got the NASDAQ. I was looking at the Russell 2000, which has fallen by even more than the overall S&P level. And quite an interesting one as well was the Nasdaq companies, which Goldman Sachs has grouped together, which aren't making any money. They're kind of loss-making technology companies, and they're perhaps the worst hit of all of this. So, you know, we're all guilty of grouping things together, but there's lots of different things going on under the surface, right?
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, to put it in simple terms, what's happening is that the investments which are performing most badly at the moment are the investments which have performed best in recent months. And again, that's not an unusual situation. What's interesting to look at is the trigger for this, because what has really scared investors is a change in the monetary policy background of the Federal Reserve. They are starting to talk about tightening interest rates to raise the cost of borrowing. And this hasn't happened for, you know, quite some time, and investors are nervous about it. And why those particular sectors of the market are falling, so we talked about the technology stocks, is the value of those kinds of growth-focused companies is enhanced in an environment of low interest rates, because much of their value is in the future. And if interest rates are low, then no one minds sitting around waiting for the growth of those companies to come through. There's no real sort of cost to them of doing that. But as the cost of money goes up, then it becomes more expensive to wait for that growth to arrive. And that's why the valuations which seemed reasonable for those stocks 2 or 3 months ago now seem rather optimistic, rather excessive. And so what we're seeing is a reassessment of what is the right price for that kind of company. And that's why certain sectors are being hit harder than others.
Yeah, and there's a converse to this, isn't there, Tom, which is that there are indeed other companies that their value is viewed in a very different sort of way. Maybe they're more exposed to what we call the economic cycle, and they're going to make their money when there's a sort of upturn, and when maybe prices are rising and other conditions are in place as well. So there have been those parts of the market that have actually been benefiting from a rotation, right, away from the growth type high quality companies.
That's exactly right, Ed. And it's a really important point to make, that it's terribly easy to look at the headline figure for the market, because that's what, you know, gets quoted on the news programs, and you know, the newsreader will say, you know, the Dow Jones Index or the S&P 500 fell by 1.5% today or whatever. Underneath the surface, there's lots of different things going on at the same time. And I actually this morning, you know, took the trouble to go and have a look at underlying investments and to see, you know, what's happening beneath the surface. And you know, what you talked about there is absolutely happening. Some of these companies which are more exposed to the cycle, things like commodities companies, miners, for example, oil and gas companies, some banks, for example, which tend to like interest rates rising, they've actually performed pretty well so far this year. So if you look at BP and Shell, for example, they have benefited from a rise in the oil price. Their shares are up by about 10% so far this year. BHP Billiton, a big mining company, has actually risen a little bit. The gold price has gone up a little bit. HSBC, their shares have gone up a little bit. So there's a lot of focus on these technology stocks and the fact that Tesla shares have fallen and Microsoft shares have fallen, et cetera, et cetera. But what no one is really talking about is there are other parts of the market where things are actually going the other way.
Yeah, and Tom, can we just dwell for a moment on the bond market here as well? Because I read you making quite an interesting point that perhaps the bond market isn't signalling quite the sort of fear that maybe the stock market is right now. Mm. And also just the performance of bonds here. You know, they're so unloved in lots of ways. I mean, a week or two back, we were recording a sort of Q&A with questions from investors, and many of them were saying, you know, why the hell am I holding bonds? The environment right now, I guess, isn't great for bonds, but at the same time, you might be glad to hold a few, right? Is that fair?
Well, I think that there are different things going on here at the same time. So on one level, the environment is not good for bonds because interest rates are going to rise this year, and that tends to be a poor environment for bonds. On the other hand,
Forgive me, but that effect is quite similar to what you were describing with these growth companies, right? It's a similar effect of inflation and interest rate rises eroding those future fixed returns.
Yes, that's right. So in some ways, these kinds of shares, which have been performing badly recently, have some of the same characteristics as bonds, and so behave in the same way. But there are other types of bonds, corporate bonds, which are all, the price of which is also determined by the health, the underlying health of the companies that that issue the bonds. And I think one of the things which gives me some encouragement is that with all of that volatility in the market earlier in the week, what we didn't see was an increase due to worries about the health of the companies in the yields which investors were demanding to invest in those bonds. So what that's saying to me is that there isn't a fundamental anxiety about the health of the economy or the health of companies. That what's happening with the fall in these share prices is a reassessment of what is the correct valuation for those highly valued shares. So what that's saying to me is the economy is in pretty good shape. The economy is growing. We're recovering from the pandemic. That's leading the Federal Reserve to worry about inflation and to think about tightening interest rates. And in that environment, some of those valuations look a bit overcooked, and that's why they're falling back. But it doesn't say to me that we've got a fundamental economic problem at the moment. And that's important, I think.
Yeah, and on that point about interest rates, I think we've got a meeting of the Fed soon. That's likely to give us a bit more information about the direction of policy movements this year. It would be good, I guess, if markets can get through that Fed meeting with enough to really price in what their expectation for rate rises and rate changes are this year, because then at that point we'll have a bit more stability, you'd think, in the stock market if all this is being driven by monetary policy.
Yes, and there is quite some uncertainty about what the outlook is for interest rates in the US in particular. And that Federal Reserve meeting that you referenced there is this week. We'll find out tomorrow evening, actually, what the Fed's current thinking is. The expectation is that we won't see a rise in interest rates this week. Maybe proved wrong. We're speaking before the meeting. But the expectation is that we'll get a hint that the first rate hike is going to come at the next meeting, which is actually in the middle of March. And then there are another six meetings this year of the Federal Reserve after that this year. And the market is expecting that there'll be another three rate rises. So in half of those meetings, there'll be a rate rise. Mm-hmm. I've seen some predictions actually that there might be more rate rises than that. Goldman Sachs, I think, is talking about the Fed raising interest rates at each meeting until it's got on top of inflation. So there's a big difference between those two scenarios in terms of market sentiment. And I think that's why it's very important that we get a sense of what the Fed's thinking is this week.
Yeah, and just finally, Tom, before we get on to what people could or should do about all of this, let's focus on the fundamentals of company strength at the moment, because we've had some high profile names that have stumbled, particularly in the US, particularly in the sort of tech sector, Netflix, you know, giving downbeat news on its subscriber numbers, things like that. But it hasn't all been bad news, has it? I mean, a lot of companies have been reporting higher than expected earnings. So where are we on earnings?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, to be honest. I mean, we have had a few sort of, you know, worrying hints that companies are facing rising cost pressures, for example. A couple of big banks flagged that possibility up. And you mentioned Netflix there, which was talking about a slowdown in subscriber numbers. But the earnings forecast for the quarter that we're talking about, which is the fourth quarter of last year, that's what's being reported at the moment, is for another strong rise in earnings. You know, more than 20% growth in earnings year on year in that final quarter of 2021. Now, we are in the process of seeing a stabilization of earnings, a reduction to a more sustainable level in earnings. It will probably, even out at about 9 or 10% for the whole of this year, and maybe the same next year. So that is a slowdown from the recovery that we saw last year. But it's not a bad sustainable rate of growth. If earnings can keep going at 9 or 10%, then, you know, that should support the market at current levels, as long as the Federal Reserve doesn't push too hard on interest rates, which is one concern, and as long as those valuations that we talked about are deemed to have fallen back to a more sustainable level. So there are a few ifs and buts and caveats there, but the underlying earnings picture, the economic and earnings picture, is not at all bad.
Indeed. Finally then, Tom, how should investors play all of this? Because I've actually been thinking about this a lot in terms of my own investments, and it's a bit of a dilemma because, you know, I know enough and we speak about it enough here to know that it's seldom a good idea just to panic and sell, even when you've seen quite worrying falls like we've seen in the past week. But I've almost got the opposite problem. I'm sort of aware that maybe the really canny thing to do is invest more at times like this, but that also feels pretty hair-raising. And it just feels like, you know, either option means trying to time the market. Am I best off just sort of, you know, zoning out a little bit from this noise and just ploughing through in a kind of mechanical way?
I think the short answer to that is yes. I think, you know, trying to time the market is notoriously difficult. The very fact that we are talking about these market movements after the NASDAQ has already fallen 20% and the S&P 500 has fallen by 10% indicates the difficulty it is in spotting the absolute top of the market. You tend to be worrying about falling share prices when they have already fallen. And it works in reverse as well. People tend to get the confidence back to get back into the market sometime after markets have bottomed. So, you know, timing the market is very difficult. Most people don't do it correctly. So, you know, I think there are a few tips, if you like, that I give people. I think, you know, invest for the long run. If you're still saving for your retirement, for example, then I would say keep putting money in on a regular, almost mechanistic basis, so that you're doing it on say once a month, you're putting some more money into the market. That way you don't have to think about it. Your emotions don't come into the equation. And that means that you will invest when it feels least comfortable to do so. And very often that is the best time to invest. So yeah, almost I'd say, you know, I'm agreeing with you. Take yourself out of the equation, because, you know, psychology being what it is, it's very difficult to make the right decisions. Make it as automatic and mechanistic as you can.
Yeah, that's good advice at this current time, I think, Tom. That is all we have time for. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.